I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now in depth on why sci-fi remains one of the whitest preserves in publishing. Tomorrow, the Black Panther returns. Created 50 years ago as a black king turned superhero, he's being resurrected for Marvel Comics by writer Ta-Nehisi Coates. Is it a sign that sci-fi and fantasy readers will finally have more diverse stories to read, and that writers of color are at long last breaking into the genre? This discussion is part of my bookish resolution for 2016 to read more science fiction and fantasy and to discuss it more often on the show. So I'll be taking notes. We'll be creating a list of all of the science fiction and fantasy writers that you suggest. And I will be reading some of them. So as our guests join us, I want you to think about this. I'd like to hear from you on the writers and the characters of color that you read in fantasy and science fiction. How about some of the young women who are writing for the genre? Do you think it is high time for sci-fi and fantasy to evolve? So I'd like to hear from you on a list of women who are writing for science fiction and fantasy, writers of color who are writing for the genre. And are we finally seeing the time when the genres of sci-fi and fantasy are evolving? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Steph Curtis hanging out here with me in the studio and checking out the nprnews.org/live page. And then I'm on Twitter, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. Our guest this morning, Zen Cho, is a writer. She's the author of Sorcerer to the Crown, and she's with us today from London. And welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks, Carrie. It's very exciting to be here.
Andre Carrington is with us. He's an assistant professor of English at Temple University, and he's the author of Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race in Science Fiction. And he has tweeted out photos of himself at the studio. Andre, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Good morning. I am at Temple University right now, but I'm an assistant professor at Drexel University.
Drexel, forgive me. I put Temple in there and I knew it was Drexel. Thank you for that. So Andre, you've written about Marvel Comics and race, and I wonder what your perspective is on the arrival tomorrow of the Black Panther.
I'm very excited to see the Black Panther comics making a return in a high-profile way with a contemporary black author who people are really excited to read.
Yeah, I mean, what does it say anything about where comics are going, about where fantasy is going, where science fiction is going, do you think?
Yes, I think it's a great moment of crossover where we get to kind of get inside the head of Ta-Nehisi Coates as a writer whose perspective we've heard on a lot of pressing social issues in our time, and recognize how his being a comics fan his whole life and a black American who's written about his life, how that has shaped him and how that shaped his outlook on society and these cultural icons that we all love.
You know, I don't know if you read this, Andre, but there apparently the idea to have Ta-Nehisi Coates write this comic came out of an Atlantic Magazine conference where they held a forum titled, What If Captain America Were Muslim and Female? I mean, is that kind of the right question to start asking about comics and about science fiction and fantasy?
Yes, I think it is the right question, because we should be asking ourselves every day, what if America were Muslim and female? What if America is Latino, right? What if America is not just American citizens, but is everybody in America? And I think fantasy stories are a great way to think about who we really are in those terms.
Zen, is there anything wrong with equating what's going on with in the comic book industry with what is happening with fantasy and science fiction? I mean, is there some cross-pollination there that we should take note of?
There is a lot of cross-pollination, and I mean, in a way, there's probably less than there should be. The real kind of strongholds of book fantasy and science fiction fandom, you know, are stereotypically very white and sort of old. But when you go to the big comic cons, you meet lots, you know, a very diverse group of people, you know, in terms of age, sexuality, gender, race, who read across genres and across speculative genres specifically. So not just comics, science fiction, fantasy, you know, but also manga, you know, movies, everything. And I think I think it is a bit inaccurate to equate what happens in comics, but it's related to the moment, the cultural moment that Andre talked about. That, you know, I think we are seeing a kind of blossoming of the speculative genres, which will hopefully just continue to develop.
You sounded like you were going to add something to that, Zen.
Well, I could go on for a while. I think it's an American moment in a while. I was sort of thinking that there does seem to be kind of a moment in America where demographically, perhaps, you're seeing kind of people of color and also women kind of, you know, really starting to gain power, gain a platform. So Ta-Nehisi Coates is a huge, you know, celebrity in certain circles. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's because of the internet as well. It's a global moment as well. It's, you know, I'm neither American nor British, so I have a bit more of a perspective what's happening outside those circles. And what you're seeing is that just internationally, I think you're getting more, starting to hear more voices from outside the kind of traditional centers of cultural production in the West.
You know what I was going to ask you, Zen, is when you talk about this cultural moment, I wonder if it is being driven by readers who are saying, I demand more stories of characters that look like me and see the world the way I do, and writers who can bring that kind of perspective? Or is this really the publishing industry sees a place where, you know, some revenue can be made, and so they're finally moving into that space?
I don't think this is industry-driven as such. I think it is, you know, ultimately the industry responds to what readers ask for. So I think it is readers and writers, and, you know, all writers start as readers, hopefully. So both of them saying we want to be heard, or we want to hear new voices, or rather the voices have always been there but haven't been heard before.
Stuff off the page.
SW says two important authors, Octavia Butler and Colson Whitehead, Kindred and Zone One, are great places to start with sci-fi. And then SW came back and said, do I have to mention that neither Octavia Butler nor Colson Whitehead are white?
To the phones to Brian in Minneapolis. Hey, Brian, hi.
Hi, thanks. Couple things. There's always been female authors in science fiction fantasy. Marion Zimmer Bradley, Tanith Lee, you know, all of those. They were definitely in the minority, but they've always been around.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a good friend in Colorado who's a science fiction fantasy writer that you might be interested in, Carrie Vaughn.
Okay.
Who has done some really amazing work, both short story as well as, I think, 14 books in her series.
Wow. So, Brian, you make a good point about the fact that there have been women writing in this genre, but they've been in the minority. Have you always read women writers?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I started reading Tolkien, I think the second book I read was Marion Zimmer Bradley's series, and I can't even remember what it was called right at the moment, so...
Thanks very much for the call. Andre, I wanted to ask you about something that I read in Wired magazine that kind of goes to what Brian was talking about. Wired wrote, when people of color do appear in science fiction, it's often as sidekicks or advisors. Black characters are likely to die quickly and are unlikely to ever interact with any other black characters, since many galaxies seem to contain only about three black people. Is that generally true?
That is largely true if we're talking about mainstream media representation. And by mainstream media, I mean television and movies. And to a large extent, still, comic books and published fiction are a lot like that. And I think the point that that Wired article is making is one that I definitely agree with, which is that these fantastic genres are produced by the same industries and culture and the same media corporations that have the same hiring practices and the same editorial policies and kind of the same executive leadership and notions of what the bottom line is and who is going to tune in and who has money to spend that producers of any genre do. And I think that's where those exclusive patterns come from.
You know, Zen, as I was thinking about this, I was thinking, is it really possible that science fiction and fantasy is behind the rest of publishing? And publishing's numbers about diversity are not very good. We did a show on that a couple months ago. You know, and that sci-fi and fantasy is even behind Hollywood when it comes to characters and writers of color, which is hard to believe. But, I mean, what I'm hearing Andre says is that's true. What's your view?
Yeah, I wonder if that is true. I think, you know, science fiction and fantasy, like so many communities and spaces are really a collection of communities flying in close formation, as it were. And I think American science fiction fantasy, what I'm seeing is a real movement towards centering voices of women, of writers of color, of queer writers, and so on. And I think if you look, for example, maybe not last year's Hugo Awards list, but you know, previous years, you're starting to see a lot of names, you know, of women and people of color on those awards ballots. So there's definitely a kind of movement there. You know, British science fiction fantasy, you could argue actually that's behind the times in terms of you know, sort of racial diversity compared to mainstream fiction. I think part of it is that the West has certain stories they're interested in hearing from the rest of the world, as it were. And perhaps those stories fit more easily into a literary fiction kind of side of the shelf or the mainstream side of the shelf. And with science fiction and fantasy, it's as, almost as if, well, we've already got the spaceships and dragons. What do we need people of color for, right?
Yeah. In fact, I was reading, I think this came out of The Guardian, or a British writer was saying that fantasy has really gone to, I think he called it grim dark. Is that a phrase?
Yeah.
That, okay.
Yeah.
So it's like swords and it's bloodier, and that is where the industry thinks the readers are going. Do you agree with that, Zen?
Well, George R. R. Martin is hugely popular, isn't he? And he's almost kind of the epitome of grimdark. You know, I think it's just what you see when there's just one property that's just hugely successful. And inevitably, there's going to be attempts to recreate that success. And so people who kind of like writing grimdark anyway start writing more grimdark, and publishers try to buy more grimdark because they think, you know, this could be the next Game of Thrones.
I see.
You see the same phenomenon with things like Hunger Games and so on, where you suddenly everything's dystopia. I don't think, you know, I think readers want a range of things. I don't think they just want grimdark. And grimdark's interesting, of course, because what you then see is often an interpretation, a fantasy interpretation of history, which is really focused on things like, you know, widespread rape of women and abuse of women. And if a reader then says, if readers then say, as they do now, well, I'm not that keen actually on reading, you know, repeated use of these tropes of abuse of women and rape of women for pure drama or entertainment, people then, the response is then, oh, well, but that's what it was like in olden times. You know, it's realistic. You know, we're trying to be realistic. Well, in a story that's got dragons in it, and you're sort of arguing realism on this ground, you know.
Andre, I'd love to hear what you think about that.
I do think that it's a big fallacy to claim that the satisfying the tastes of the male gaze and satisfying sometimes the prurient interests of some segments of the audience, even the author's own interests sometimes, on the basis of saying that these are realistic dynamics, doesn't make a whole lot of sense in stories that have dragons and continents different from the ones on planet Earth. I would also note that one of the texts that a listener pointed out earlier, Kindred by Octavia Butler, is a story in which a Black American woman travels back in time to live the life of an ancestor of hers who was an enslaved woman.
Wow.
And Butler described that novel as a grim fantasy. So
really?
Even though it uses that typical high-tech science fiction device of time travel, when she looks at American history, she finds those grim and dark dynamics in our own past. And fantasy is a way of thinking about how we imagine what our past is like in the present.
This is a conversation that comes out of some bookish resolutions that I wrote in January for 2016. And one of them was to read and to talk about more science fiction and fantasy. I will concede it's not a genre that I grew up reading. I'm really interested in, especially hearing what our guests have to say about where it's moving to. Andre Carrington with us today. He's a professor at Drexel University, and he's the author of Speculative Blackness, The Future of Race in Science Fiction. And Zen Cho with us. She's a writer, and she's the author of Sorcerer to the Crown, a book that I will put on my list immediately. Excellent. I want to hear from you this morning on the writers and the characters of color and women writers and women characters that are showing up in science fiction and fantasy. that you're interested in and that you think more of us should be reading? And how do you think sci-fi and fantasy are evolving today? You know, there's a big debate about, and I think Zen alluded to some of this, about where the genres are headed. 651-227-6000. Oh, by the way, and also recommend some writers that you really love. 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter, where I'm actually having a hard time keeping up with all of the tweets here. Emily, Steph, help. Emily says, Emily St. John Mandel. Now, she's interesting, isn't she? I have been reading her, and she is not somebody that I think of traditionally as sci-fi or fantasy, which means that I have to adjust my view of what genres are.
Because the moment you go into a dystopian world, it is speculative and could be either science fiction or fantasy. And that I felt like it was into science fiction.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Nick, hang on one second. Just a couple more here. Karen Lord, Inetti Okra, Okra 4, right? Okara 4. No.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nick Jemison. Who else do you have on your list?
N.K. Jemison, yeah. And then, Jeff, let's just get this out of the way. Let's not forget about J.K. Rowling, probably the biggest fantasy author in the past two decades. And Jeff also says there's an interesting historical series of books about the Napoleonic Wars with dragons written by a woman. Her name is Naomi Novik. It's called the Temeraire series. And Tin Lizzy says the three-body problem is the first in a trilogy translated from Chinese, powerful and fascinating speculative fiction novel from a wonderfully non-Western perspective.
Okay, to the phones to Al in Eden Prairie. Hey, Al, hi.
Hey, good morning. Hi. Great conversation. Well, just a little bit of background. I've been reading science fiction for quite a long time. Blish, Heinlein, you know, I've actually, Anne McCaffrey was one, kind of an early one that I was interested in. I actually didn't realize when I read the book that I wasn't paying attention to the author. I didn't realize she was female, but it was actually really good. So I just thought I'd throw that in there. But I guess I want to get things a little more current. I read an article in the Strib talking about, I think it was Supergirl or something, you know, Superman, Supergirl series. And it was, you know, talking about how great it was and such, and that they're, you know, that she's doing so well and successful and having a female, et cetera, et cetera. And then three quarters of the way down the article, it kind of brought up the fact that it had a spectacular opening, and then within a few weeks, audiences had dropped by over half, and it's, you know, a good chance it's going to be canceled. So I guess in the marketing thing, you know, you talk about it's great for, you know, diversity, et cetera, which is fine, but if it doesn't sell, I guess, what's the point?
Yeah. Zen, what would you say about that? I wasn't aware. That is a television series, right? New TV series?
But there must be lots of series that fail that have male main characters, and somehow it's only when, you know, there's a woman as a main character or a person of color that suddenly it becomes, oh, it must be because it's about a woman, it must be because it's a person of color. There's so many reasons why a property could fail or a story could not connect with readers, and I think there's a real tendency to kind of look at stuff that's more diverse and sort of blame the diversity if it doesn't succeed commercially.
Yeah. Andre, Daniel says on Twitter, is the question that there aren't as many speculative writers of color or that they aren't being published? He says, I would say it's the latter. How would you answer that?
Well, there are certainly readers of all racial backgrounds, and people of all racial backgrounds have active, powerful, astute imaginations. Whether that translates into the kind of writing that gets picked up by fiction publishers and by television studios and film studios is a different question that is about who is in the seats of power in those industries. So I tend to agree with Daniel on that question, but I also think that if we expand our notion of who authors are, then we might notice that a lot of people who are making music are, in a lot of ways, speculative fiction thinkers. A lot of people who are making visual art, a lot of people whose art form is dance, are engaging in the fantastic and are redefining it in ways that say, hey, if I'm not going to express myself in this way because it doesn't fit who I am or it's just not my style, then I'm going to make my fantasy a reality in this other way. So I think of music artists like Samus, and a lot of the work that Kanye West has done sounds like science fiction, and a lot of the fantasy and spectacular elements in FKA Twigs's performance look like science fiction to me. So I say that if we broaden our horizons, we see there are actually a lot of Black and other people of color creating speculative fiction narratives.
To Dawn, or Dawn in White Bear Lake called, and she says, Hillary Rohr, an up-and-coming female sci-fi author, and to the phones to Joe in St. Paul. Hi, Joe.
Hey, I am a huge fantasy geek. I've been reading it for years, and I just wanted to make sure that your listeners were familiar with Brent Weeks. He wrote the Black Prism series, and it's a fantasy series where it's actually advantageous to be a person of color, because of the dynamic of, you know, the power system that he used. And I just always found that very interesting.
What do you make of that, Zen?
I haven't read Brent Weeks. It sounds interesting.
Andre, a thought on that?
I haven't read it either, but it's a great point of departure for telling a different kind of story about what society might be like.
Okay. Here's Steve, who says, I'm a novelist. When I made my protagonist a Japanese woman, I was told from the outset that it would depress sales. Andre, your thoughts, Steve wants to know, on that.
That is, it's such a terrible thing to hear, right? And it must be really, I wonder what in the mind of the person who says that makes them think so. Because it's such a defeatist attitude, and it comes already with this assumption that people who are Japanese women don't have interesting stories to tell, and that people who are knowledgeable and care deeply about relating those perspectives aren't going to succeed in making that work. First and foremost, it says to me, well, that person just hasn't read the story of a Japanese woman in her own words yet and doesn't know how rich and vital that experience is. So, of course, when someone approaches them with a story from that perspective, they don't know how valuable it's going to be.
You know, Zen, didn't you say earlier that when we were talking about how you can widen the frame on what this is, I thought you mentioned manga, which wasn't that started in Japan. And there's a lot of people who are interested in that kind of art.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, you know, saying, oh, if you have a Japanese woman as a protagonist, that will depress sales, despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary, because it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? I mean, there are a lot of books being published every day. There's a lot of competition for readers' time. So readers aren't just readers. They'll watch TV, they'll watch movies, etc. If publishers don't throw their support behind the book, it will almost inevitably fail, commercially speaking. It might not sell, it might not get to readers, because there's just so much out there, and each book really has to kind of fight to survive. I think you do see a real tendency in the publishing industry. I've been very fortunate myself, but you do see a tendency where stories by women and stories by people of color don't get the kind of funding, the marketing support, the belief that this can really reach readers that stories by white men do.
Paul says on Twitter, women who write epic fantasy, Kate Elliott, Juliet McKenna, Stina Liked, sorry about the mispronunciation there, Elizabeth Baer, Martha Wells, Judith Tarr, and Steph off the page.
Kristen says, don't forget Minnesota's own Lois McMaster Bougeau. Her main character has to deal with physical deformities. And then Kristen also added, and also a shout out to Ben Aronovich for his Rivers of London series called A Blend of CSI and Harry Potter by a critic. The main character is a Black London policeman, although the author is white.
Okay, somebody who's tweeting is Free Range Zombie wants us to talk about steampunk. So we will, okay? It's a conversation here about science fiction and fantasy, where gender and race fit into that. I am getting so many great names from you of women writers, writers of color. Keep them coming. You can tweet me at Carrie NPR. You can call in to talk about this at 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm going to ask Zen and Andre to think about steampunk as we go to news. Phil, what are you watching?
Hi, Carrie. Voters are lining up across Wisconsin to cast their ballots in the state's presidential primary. Early polling signaled a tight race for both parties, with Republican Ted Cruz and Democrat Bernie Sanders angling for victories. One woman who is voting for Sanders says it's because of his efforts to address the cost of college. Carrie Ann Todd, who's 39, says she's paying more on her student loans than she is on her cars. PayPal is saying it is canceling plans to bring 400 jobs to North Carolina after lawmakers in that state passed a law that restricts protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. The California-based company says it is canceling its planned expansion in Charlotte because of the law, which was signed last month. Governor Pat McCrory was on hand to celebrate days earlier when PayPal announced plans to expand its operations center in Charlotte. U.S. hiring has reached a 9-year high, a sign of robust business demand for new workers as the number of open positions slipped. The Labor Department says 5.4 million people found jobs in February, a nearly 6% jump from January, and the most since November of 2006. More Americans also quit their jobs. Both figures point to a healthier, more dynamic labor market. And hundreds of police officers are gathering to mourn the death of a Virginia state trooper who was killed by a gunman at a bus station. Virginia state police say about 20 state police agencies from across the U.S. are attending the funeral for trooper Chad Dermeyer. Authorities say Dermeyer was fatally shot by James Brown at the Greyhound bus terminal in Richmond on Thursday. Brown was killed by two other state troopers. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 10:42.
Wednesday on Morning Edition, results and analysis of the Republican and Democratic presidential primaries being held today in Wisconsin. I'm Kathy Werzer. The latest from the campaign trail and the rest of the news starting at 4 a.m. right here on NPR News.
I'm Tom Weber. Next hour on NPR News, former Minneapolis Mayor R.T. Ryback joins me to discuss his new memoir, Pothole Confidential. You'll also hear about a festival exploring Native American performances in 10-minute increments. Join us at 11.
Programming is supported by the University of Minnesota School of Nursing, preparing psychiatric mental health nurse practitioners to serve the needs of patients and their families across Minnesota. U of M School of Nursing, driven to discover.
Programming is supported by the Minnesota Nurses Association, professional nurses with the skills and experience dedicated to ensuring the safety and quality of patient care. Nurses put the care in healthcare.
Hey, I'm at the Fitzgerald Theater tonight with Krista Tippett as she launches her book tour for her new book, Becoming Wise. And then I'm there on May 9th with Louise Erdrich. I've just started her new novel. I can't wait to dive into it. We're going to talk about it on May 9th. Tickets on the thread. Steph Curtis hanging out with me here in the studio as we talk about sci-fi and fantasy and fiction. Andre Carrington with us from Drexel University, and Zen Cho with us from London. She's the author of Sorcerer to the Crown. Steph, we are getting so many titles, and we are making a list of this, aren't we?
Yes, there will be a list of everything.
Thank God, because I can't remember all of these authors, but I love it that we're getting a lot.
And in fact, on the thread right now, there's a list of books for people who've never read sci-fi or fantasy
They
don't like it.
Oh, what? Okay, think they don't like it.
There's a list of books that is good gateway books.
Okay.
Including like Chang Rae Lee's latest novel and things like that. So check that out.
Do you want to mention some more titles?
Sure. There's Chang Rae Lee. There's Emily Sin Mangel's Wool, Octavia Butler's Fledgling, Lev Grossman's The Magicians, and that. So those are all books that will get you into sci-fi and fantasy. And then Bruce has a comment for us from Twitter. Bruce says, "This mathematician and sci-fi amateur hates having identity politics invading my favorite literature. Keep sci-fi about science."
Andre, what do you say to that?
I don't really have anything to say to it. That sounds like someone who is just willfully ignorant of the breadth of diversity and creativity that's out there. So I can't say anything to dissuade them because they don't seem to want to hear anything.
Zen, you feel the same way?
Well, I always think it's really interesting when people say things like that, because science fiction especially has always been such a political genre. You know, I think if you spoke to that guy whose name I've forgotten, sorry, but
Bruce.
If you ask, you know, who Bruce's favorite authors are, you know, I suspect he'd start naming names like Heinlein and so on. And when you read their stuff, actually, they're very overtly political. Science fiction is a literature of ideas. That's what people always say. And it's not just about science. It's about ideas and includes things like, you know, how should we live? How do we govern ourselves? How should we, you know, what's the future of the human race? And those are inevitably political ideas. And authors will express their opinions one way or another through their fiction.
To the phones to Jason in Minneapolis. Hey, Jason. Hi.
Hi.
You called to talk about steampunk?
Yeah, right, there was a book that I read called Otherland by Tad Williams.
Uh-huh.
And he was just a bald white guy, he wrote about one of the main characters in there was African woman from, and she was one of the main characters, and it's about technology and being on the internet and online, going into a virtual world. And I really thought it was interesting, you know, reading that book. I had to turn the cover over and look at who wrote this. I'm like, oh, wow, this is, really played to a lot of diversity in the story. And
who
I thought at the time it was really ahead of its time.
Yeah. So you said you read this in 96.
Yeah, well, that's when the book came out.
Yeah,
so yeah, I read it right when it came out, pretty
yeah.
much.
And the author is a balding white guy. Is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah. Yeah. His name's Tad Williams.
Huh. Okay.
And it's a really interesting story. I felt like it was ahead of its time. I felt like, it had characters all over the globe, it had conspiracy theories and secret societies. And,
okay.
Thank you. Very interesting.
Jason, you might be interested in this. Chris tweets, if you talk about steampunk, please mention Sherry Priest and her wonderful Clockwork Century series. It starts with Bone Shaker. Zen, where does steampunk fit into this? Maybe we better define what it is.
Mm. Steampunk is essentially stories, fiction. It's a whole genre, actually. You have people costuming, makers who make stuff that look kind of steampunky. And it's quite hard to define, but what it is if you imagined the Victorian era had developed science along basically their broadly incorrect ideas of what science was, and sort of brought it up almost, I guess, to the current day. So if you sort of extended it and with a Victorian aesthetic, so people wearing corsets and huge gowns and top hats, but also flying around in sort of balloons and and have ray guns with clockwork on them, that sort of thing.
Do you like that kind of fiction?
Well, steampunk itself, I'm not that into. I am a historical fantasy writer, but I can definitely see the appeal, the kind of frocks, the kind of outfits. People do kind of romanticize the Victorian era quite a lot. And I always think sort of fantasy is about religion and is about history. So something like steampunk is not surprising. One thing I find interesting about steampunk as well, I think it's really been very popular in recent years. And I think part of that is because technology nowadays has become sort of so inaccessible and so incomprehensible to the layperson, the ordinary layperson. I have an iPhone. I have no idea how it works. It might as well be operated by an imp inside it.
And it is.
I think if you do steampunk, right, steampunk is all about technology that you can kind of get. You get how clockwork works. You can see it.
Oh,
it's about gears. It's about that sort of thing.
Right.
And as I said, there's a real maker culture around it. So people make their own stuff. People make keyboards that look kind of steampunk, and you can see all the works going on behind it. So I think that's kind of, it's quite empowering in that sense. But of course, there's also the fact that the Victorian era was the height of the British Empire. So, it's a genre that has the ability to elide a lot of issues around that.
Yeah. So as long as we've brought up imps here, Andre, I want to share something that I read from Bernard Heyman, who was writing on thetoast.com. He says, stories that ignore or overlook the realities of oppressed and marginalized groups or seek to replace them with fictional analogs like elves, ogres, or vampires can also undermine their potency and their potential. Does he have a point there?
He's on to something, I think. I think what he's getting at is that, yes, if you do replace reality with something that is, an utter departure from it, a denial, a refusal to recognize it, then that's a big problem. But I think a lot of the time, some of those fantastic tropes are supplements to the real diversity of human experience.
Well, tell me what you mean by that.
Complexity of our backgrounds.
Yeah, what do you mean?
It's one thing, right, to read one thing I do in my book, in writing about the character Storm in the X-Men comics, is that it's one thing to see the figure of the mutant as kind of an outcast, an underground figure, a sort of cipher for any way a person might be marginalized. And a lot of different people can identify with that narrative And so they can identify with colorful figures who look all different kinds of ways who might share an aspect of their experience. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's much more complicated and interesting to see how those stories that have existed for a good while now offer depictions of people from different backgrounds dealing with fantastical, imagined kinds of difference and real historical kinds of difference at the same time. That's much more what the experience of marginality is really like. And the resources of feminist criticism and intersectionality allow us to understand how our real identities overlap. So our fantasized, our imagined identities would overlap and be complicated too.
From somebody who tweets as Dev Doggy, please check out The Wind Up Bird Chronicle by Murakami, or anything by Murakami. Really amazing imagery and storytelling. Steph, off the page.
James recommends Karen Lawachi's Gaslight Dogs, a 19th century type fantasy dealing with colonization and indigenous peoples.
Okay. And to Tim in St. Paul. Hi, Tim. Hey, how are you?
Fine.
Good. What'd you want to say?
Well, I teach high school, and I teach the book Kindred, and it's by far their favorite book of
the
year.
This is Octavia Butler?
Yes. Uh-huh. We approach it from a feminist perspective, so they're working on a paper right now approaching it through that lens. So we look at it through gender, and they're always telling me how they went, why isn't this a movie? Why isn't this a movie? they just love it.
What do you think they love about it, Tim?
Well, it's the story. It's just, and the way she writes. She's very approachable, detailed, and they love the writing, but they love the story. I de-emphasize the science fiction aspect, and we just get into the story.
Good to have the call. Zen, is Octavia Butler somebody who was influential to you?
She was, yeah. I always think of science fiction as, you know, it's kind of seen as an old boys club, but my entry to it was definitely mediated by the voices of women. So she was, you know, she, Joanna Russ, Ursula Le Guin, they're really who got me into science fiction in a way.
I should ask you for a couple other current recommendations that we can put on our list, Zen. And Andre, I'll ask you the same. So who are you? Who do you read, Zen, that we should add and recommend?
Well, I'm going to repeat the recommendation of Karen Lord, who's a Barbadian author, and was mentioned earlier. I was thinking of her when we were talking about Grim Dark, because she's got this great quote where she said, you know, she's from a developing country, as I am. And she said, and her books are quite optimistic. They have, you know, they address issues, but they're not fundamentally grim, dark in tone. And she says, you know, when you're from a country that's got a lot of problems anyway, you want to write fiction about solutions, not necessarily just problems, you know. Her fiction's definitely like that. I'm also a big fan of Helen Oyeyemi, who's a British Nigerian author. She's not marketed as SFF. She's marketed generally as a literary fiction author. She is excellent, and her books are very speculative in tone.
She's popped up several times on Twitter, so we will put that on the list. Zen, this is such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Andre, who would you want to add?
I would actually make some recommendations for readers who are interested in checking out this steampunk thing.
Okay, good.
And there's a genre or movement called steampunk, which is what it sounds like. It's steampunk, but with some of the African-American funk aesthetics in it. So there's a great anthology edited by Balogun Ojatade and Milton Davis called Steampunk. And there's a comic that's on the verge of coming out called The Invention of E.J. Whittaker by two black women creators that takes place in the 19th and early 20th century. I would also say to look, if you're not a reader of stories like this, look at other art forms. And one artist who comes to mind who participates in kind of a steampunk aesthetic is a Kenyan contemporary artist named Cyrus Kabiru, who makes goggles or glasses out of found materials and discarded electronics. And steampunks love their goggles. It's the thing that they love if you see them at comic conventions. It's how you know who they are.
And Andre, I love the fact that you broadened our discussion beyond books. That is just excellent. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.